Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B family brands go to grow. And today I'm joined by Alexandra Grosinger, president of Grosinger Provisions and steward of the Alexian brand. This is a remarkable family business story, one founded by her father, who passed through an unexpected loss, then carried forward by her mother, and now led by Alexandra as the next generation. Alexandra, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Same here. So let's get right into it. Let's start with your family roots. What was it like for you growing up around the business? And I guess the Alexian brand was formed already, right? That was already in the mix, or did that come later?
Our products have been around since 82. So I definitely grew up around our products, but in the mid 90s or so, we started the Alexian brand and rebranded some of our items to make a bigger splash into American retail.
Okay. So growing up around the business, what was your exposure? Like, how old were you when you said, hey, my parents are doing this thing that's here, and when did you start to have a sensibility of what they did and what that was all about?
You know, I don't know if there was ever a time. It was really when I was born, I think. Okay. I was really born into it. My dad was a sausage maker from Germany, in Southwest Germany, and he came to America to start our business and to share his craft with this country. And so when I was born, a few years after the business was started, I really grew up eating all kinds of German and other European delicacies that probably most little kids aren't eating. You know, I was eating beef hearts and tripe and pate and head cheese and all kinds of things. So I grew up into it and didn't really know any different. so it was really, you know, my dad really had roots in the sausage making world because his dad was a butcher and a sausage maker. And so he sort of passed that on to us as kids that we just really grew up in it. So I, you know, I was always growing up going to the plant and seeing all the employees. And at that time, food safety was not as big of a concern as it is now. And OSHA wasn't as big of a concern as it is now. So, you know, I was a little kid running around the plant while the sausage was being stuffed.
And it would seem that family businesses sometimes look the other way when it comes to traditional family or children labor laws.
Yeah.
If you can walk and talk, you can function in the business somehow.
Oh yeah, I was certainly stuffing marketing folders and things like that as soon as my hands worked properly with my motor skills.
That's funny. That was some of my early jobs, and I used to get bribed with Star Wars toys. So my dad's like, "Do you help us come collate press kits?" I'm like, "Well, I don't even know what that means." It's like, "Well, you have to put papers in folders." I'm like, "All right, sounds interesting. What do I get?" He's like, "How about a Star Wars toy?" I'm like, "Okay, yeah. You got me."
Yeah, exactly. Mine was more, we need all the hands we can get, so you're helping, and that's about it. No Star Wars toys or anything for me.
Just a pat on the head and a job well done, right?
Yeah,
that's all you need.
Pretty much.
So I think you said your folks founded the company in 82, right?
Yep.
So as the leader now, when you kind of look back, what parts of their original vision still show up in the business today, Alexandra?
You had mentioned earlier and told the audience that my dad had passed away unexpectedly. It was just before my 7th birthday. And so my dad was really the brains and the soul behind the business because it was really his craft. He was the sausage maker. He was coming up with all the recipes. He was coming up with the pâtés and all the other things. And my mom was really the business brains. And so when he had passed away, my mom was left with two little kids and this house and was left with this business that just wasn't quite off the ground yet and was not doing very well. But, most importantly, we lost the head of the business, the person who was the creative brains and the person who had his hands in the, sausage emulsions and knew how to make all this stuff. My mom, of course, had a very strong business background, so she could do all of that stuff. But what she really had to do was trust that the people that were working there are employees, some of which are still with us, thank goodness. But she really had to rely on those guys and girls to help carry that part of the ship while she kind of managed the rest of it. And so I think that really built the culture that we have now, which is that, we are a family business, and it a lot of times sounds cliche to say, but the crew we have is actually a real family. Some of these people have known me since when I was in diapers. So they're close family friends to begin with. But the culture there is really everybody's there to help each other and to build each other up. And nobody ever says that isn't my job. Everybody is always in it for the greater good of the business. And everybody is just a team. And so I think my father's death, unfortunately, fortunately created that culture on an unfortunate sort of circumstance.
That must have been an incredibly trying time for you, your sibling, your mom. I mean, to start a business, to lose the founder, to dealing with the loss, and then saying, but I have to soldier on. So she must be quite a resilient woman, your mom.
My mom is just the best. We had an interesting and certainly non-traditional childhood. I kind of had to become an adult at 7 years old and take care of my brother and, take care of my mom too. And that was the role I kind of took on. So I think that's why I'm kind of a resilient person and certainly independent. I had to be. I think it was a little bit ingrained in me to begin with, but I think I really took on that role on my own, and it was certainly challenging. Mom was at work all the time to make sure we had money coming in so we could stay living in our house, which, by the way, was cross-collateralized with the business at the time. So if we lost the business, we lost the house too. And just my mom is so inspirational, and she's really what makes me get up every day. And when I'm going through something difficult, I think back to what she went through at that time. And now I'm old enough where she tells me all kinds of stories, and I know everything that she went through. And it's just, I don't know how somebody can get up and do that every day, but she did it, and she did it with flying colors. She built this thing into something amazing, and we're a well-known brand in this country and in our industry. And I am extremely fortunate to be part of it and to really have stepped into something that's an amazing foundation to build on.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you only knew your dad for, unfortunately, a short time, but where do you see him showing up in the business today? That initial vision, is that still something that you see showing up, his that spirit that he had to, because it takes quite a bit of strength, vigor, determination and risk to come to this country, launch something, put it all on the line, and start making the wheel move. So when you look at that, what where is that showing up for you, Alexandra, your dad?
I think so all of the recipes and all of our products, all of those recipes are his recipes or variations of them. So certainly inherently he shows up every day in that regard. And I think he shows up in ways actually that make us laugh, because nowadays, all the regulations and all the red tape that we have to follow, and that kind of guides this business in terms of food safety and employee safety, and all of these things are just things that were not as big of a deal when he was alive. And so we have so much red tape and regulation that, I mean, I'm laughing half the time thinking Dad would not have survived this business. He would have told the USDA inspector to go scratch, or the OSHA inspector, get out of my plant, or you can't do those things anymore. So some of his some of the way that he was, which was very old school European, tough like his dad, just wouldn't have flown today. So, but we keep him around by laughing about, oh, what would Ewald think to this, or how would Ewald have handled this? So we're always laughing about that part of his personality.
That's great. That's great. You didn't just go right into Grossinger. As we spoke about before this episode, you intentionally spent a little time outside the family business
I
before
did.
returning. Talk about that for a moment and why that was an important step in your journey.
I think if it were up to my mom, I probably would have come right from college into the business. I had been working a little bit in the business, just helping with certain things offline and, helping at trade shows and things like that. But for me, I really felt a sense of wanting to make a name for myself and make something of myself and prove that, I'm strong and capable and worth coming in. I did not want to be the second generation that just walks into the business because they're the daughter. I was so fearful of what that would look like, what that would feel like. It was important for me to learn from someone else and learn from somewhere else first. And if I were to come back to the family business, which eventually I did, then it would have been great experience, and I would have had lots of learnings to bring back to a small business. So I had gotten a job with a large cheese manufacturer, one of the big boys, so to speak, and certainly bigger than little Grötzinger Provisions. And I learned a lot being there, and I don't regret doing that before I came into the business. There's so much that I have learned and use every day that I learned from that experience.
For instance, give us an example of something that you maybe a strong takeaway from that experience that you brought back to the family business.
I think, I learned a lot about management, good management, maybe not so good management. But I mostly learned what kind of leader I wanted to be. And it's interesting because the experience at this company was so great, and it's something that I value every day, whether there were good times or not so good times, which everybody has in a job. But the experience of being an employee, as I've been an employee for years in service and all that, but I was an employee at my first big girl job. And so, I was green and I was like 22, fresh out of college, and I thought I knew everything. And so, I went through being an employee, but now on this side, I'm looking back at being an employee and looking back at the bosses I had. And now that I am the boss, I'm like, I have all these moments of, oh, that's why that decision was made, or that's why this wasn't done this way, or I just have such a better view. And now I look back at my 22-year-old green self thinking, oh my God, what a jerk. What a jerk I was. Not a jerk in a bad sense, but just, I thought I knew so much more than I did. So I, being on having the ability to be on both sides of the coin, so to speak, and having had that experience as an employee at my first big girl job was really impactful for me as a leader. I just the other thing is too, working for a larger company, they have at least one person or a team of people that's responsible for all different facets of the business. So I really spent a lot of time learning all of that and talking to all those people. And then I came back to the family business, which were much smaller, and we don't even have people to do certain things. We have to outsource. And so I just was able to see how a big business works, and it gave me something to hopefully aspire to.
Yeah, a great framework and a great context,
Absolutely.
and I feel your meaning, and every now and again I'll look back at things that maybe I wrote down or plans or thoughts I had from, my early 20s, and I'm like, wow, I had some starry eyes there.
The perspective is just, it's wild, you know, and it's funny because sometimes I listen to friends or family or even my own employees talk about things or talk about their jobs or their bosses. And it's just so interesting to be in this position because I fully understand what they're saying and what they're saying resonates with me. And I totally get it. But then on the other side, I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'm in this position now and having their perspective, and having that perspective from that side is, it's wildly helpful in being a good leader because it, you know, shows you understand your employees and that's one of the most important things I think, to being a leader is being able to be with people and understand people and not treat people like they're numbers.
And see the world through their lens, which you
Yep.
can honestly do because you held that lens for a number of years.
Yep.
Quick background check on where'd you go to college and what'd you study?
So I went to the University of Vermont in good old Burlington, Vermont.
Okay.
Shout out to the Catamounts. I went there and I started off undecided, funny enough. I wish I would have gone back and done it a little differently, but I started undecided and then I ended up going into psychology because I was thinking about being a clinical therapist. But I had all these different interests and wasn't sure what I was doing. But ultimately, in the middle of college, I had gone to a trade show with my mom in Chicago, and I just some the bug bit me, and I just said in that moment, I need to come back to this business someday. I love psychology, but maybe I like it more as a hobby. I want to come back to this business. So I ended up continuing through and getting a BA in psychology. I thought, well, first of all, I didn't want to spend a lot of extra time and money in school, but I thought that psychology would be a really good background for business. A little bit unconventional, but I think it's a good background for anybody to have, especially leaders. So I continued with that, and then I ended up doing minors in Spanish and also marketing. So I
Oh,
had,
excellent. Okay. So you went to a major show. You kind of saw the environment. You started to think about it. The wheels started to turn, yet you still went to a larger manufacturer for a period of time. So what was that moment, Alexandra? You said, okay, it's time. I want to come back. How did that happen?
You know, the company that I was at was kind of switching gears. They had just built a big new office. And at the time, I had been lucky enough to work from home. And then they had changed what they wanted, and they wanted everybody who was working from home to now occupy this big giant office, which happened to be not in New Jersey, where I was living at the time. So we ended up deciding to part ways. And so I was really in this moment of, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to go to the family business now, or should I continue going out and making something of myself? And I was really struggling with that. What am I doing? What am I doing? And when I tell you I had a complete and total epiphany, I mean, I'm not kidding. I woke up at 2 a.m. out of a dead sleep and I sat up in bed and said, what am I doing? I said, why am I thinking about this so hard? The obvious answer is to go into the family business now. You're running out of time. Your mom wants to retire and enjoy her life for once. And, you know, you need the time to learn under her wings. And the more time you spend with her, the better off you'll be. So go. Stop trying to apply to other places. Go and do this family business thing. So it was quite literally, I woke up from a dream and said, you know what? I'm going to call my mom in the morning. I'm in. And then we made a plan from there. And then I started a
That's
couple months
awesome.
later.
And I might be biased in this show, but some might argue that stepping back into the family business is how you're going to make something of yourself. Something rather remarkable, right?
Well, now that I look back at it, I don't know, you know, I think that people there I think there's a misconception about family business and the next generation coming into the family business. And I think that a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, you're just going to walk in and collect a paycheck and And that was so in my head. And so I just kept thinking, I need to make something of myself first and earn this. And I did earn it, absolutely. But a lot of the earning that I did was actually working in the business. And I certainly did not walk in. I was hit with challenge smack in the face, like after the first month. And family business is hard, and small business is hard. And coming into something that's already so well established, and you have employees that have been there since, almost the beginning, who are, who know the way the world works and know how the business works and know all that, you're stepping into something that's already there. And it's hard. And you don't just walk in and collect a paycheck. So now looking back, I'm like, I did make something of myself before I went, but I think, and employees have said this, that I've made something of myself there because they weren't sure what to expect either. They knew me, but they didn't know what I was like to work with and work for. And some of the challenges that I experienced in the first couple months, they looked at me and said, "No, you're good. You got this. You're the right person for this job. If we were second guessing it, we're not anymore. You're good."
Well,
So I was lucky to have their approval.
that's great. Most certainly, you do walk in and collect a paycheck, but for our non-family business listeners, it's a very small paycheck and you're going to work a ridiculous amount of hours to earn
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
it.
And you know what? And my mom certainly was not going to let me just walk in and do nothing and
So
collect money.
let's talk
That
about
was
that. Where, how, when you stepped in, what was your role when you came back in? Like, did your mom give you a title, or how did that work?
N no, there, I came from corporate, which everybody had a title and it was a very serious and strict org chart. We had nothing. We had
Nothing.
nothing like that. I asked for a title when I came to the family business, and my mom's like, "A title? What for? What? What do you need that for?" So I started off working in marketing because that's where I really liked. I really liked to be, and she needed more help with some of the marketing, so that's really where I started. But I ended up diving headfirst into operations. My mom and I kind of had a loose-ish plan as to how I was going to learn and on what timeline and at what point was she going to exit. And that just blew up in our faces as that happens in small family business. But we had had somebody who was at the company for 15 years, and she was our operations admin, and she was in charge of ordering all the raw materials and packaging, and she was in charge of processing all the customer orders. And so I was learning a bit from her and learning how to be her backup for when I needed to be. Little did I know, she was gonna exit the business abruptly due to an awful illness, which luckily enough, she is healthy and well now. But she one day just didn't come back because she was horribly ill. And I had to step in and do that. And that was when that was when I really proved myself because I was thrown into the fire with nobody really knew anything because she had done that job for 15 years. And so then you start thinking, oh, if I'm going to run this business, we really need to get some standard operating procedures and instruction books together for certain roles. And you learn a lot when you're thrown into the fire. But from that point, I really did that job for a long time, and that was incredibly impactful on my knowledge journey and learning how this business actually works. The marketing stuff I had down pat, but the ops, if had that not happened, I'm not sure that I would have gotten as good of an education as I had gotten.
Yeah, from that role, I mean, you see a lot. You see, it's very much, it sounded like very much a 360 vantage point of the business, and from a supply chain standpoint to a customer and distribution standpoint, so an incredible, I guess for you, a crash course.
You're not kidding. It was a crash course. It was a
And
crash course.
another thing that I think a lot of non family business listeners don't fully appreciate is there's usually not a playbook. And if there is, it often gets thrown out the window. And a next generation is often being brought in, sometimes on the basis of helping with some critical need that they may have some expertise or capacity to handle. And while you came in through kind of the marketing gate, if you will, that's, not where you ended in the next chapter there, working on ops and supply chain. But a great experience and a great education, and a necessary role. So, at what point, Alexandra, or did you start to assume the leadership role then? So you were working on different aspects of the business. Obviously, you had exposure from your youth, so it wasn't foreign. You were getting deeper, you're getting more entrenched, you were learning more of the nuance of the actual operation of the business and how it goes to market. At what point did you start to ultimately, or did you and your mom have a conversation like it's time? How did that transpire?
The more I was getting comfortable and the more mom was trusting me, she began to kind of take more limited hours. She would travel more and all of that. So I started to step into leadership in that way, and manage the ship while she was not there. However, when I really stepped into the role was when COVID started. The day the world shut down was when I became the president of the company. Not officially, but basically. My mom had been on a cruise somewhere. And at the time, if you remember, that's where COVID was spreading like wildfire on these ships. And they said at that time, anybody who can work from home should. So I stood up and I said, okay, I'm running this ship, so to speak. And mom and whoever else is working from home, you have to work from home. And it was very timely because at the time my stepfather's had Alzheimer's and that was starting to advance. So as COVID was going on, mom was working less and less from home because she was caring for my stepfather. So I told her she couldn't come into the office. But she never came back. So I really stepped in overnight. And I mean, talk about crash course. I didn't expect to be the school nurse. I didn't expect to run a company and figure out how to keep it afloat during a pandemic. That was not, on the bingo card, as they say. But that's when it happened, quite literally the day the world shut down.
Wow. It's funny. A lot of our guests have different accounts of what we call the COVID era. And interestingly, it seems like a number of them similarly have stepped in or stepped up to really meet the challenge of that moment. And it sounds like largely that's what you did. And thankful for your mom because apparently she was stuck on a ship somewhere. So
Yeah, and then stuck at home after that.
So in a as a second gen and some might argue that you almost profile a little bit like a third gen because your dad started with your mom. However, she had to step in and be a leader, albeit yes, still first gen, but still was something of a bridge from your father to her to you. Talk about how you feel that responsibility on your shoulders as you're carrying forward, but the family name, the brand name, one that customers and distributors and retailers know and trust. How do you feel that, or do you feel that? How do you feel the weight of the responsibility?
I do feel the weight. I especially felt the weight early on. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how it was going to go. I was so worried about who I should be and who I needed to be and would I make my dad proud and would I make my mom proud. And, I was so stressed about making sure I wasn't going to ruin this thing. I still feel the responsibility today, but not to sound cliche, but I don't feel like it's such a responsibility. I honestly feel like it's a real joy and an honor. Sounds a little cheesy, but it doesn't feel heavy like a responsibility does. It feels joyous, and I'm so happy to be here and to still be a family-owned and run company. There are so many companies that started like us in our industry, and they've been bought up by bigger companies or bought up by private equity because there wasn't another generation to carry things on, and that was kind of what they had to do. And some of those, M&As have worked out great, and others I'm seeing brands suffering and losing their, original integrity and passion and, all of that. And that makes me so sad because I'm passionate about specialty food and family business. So for me, I'm just thrilled to be here, and to have the opportunity to continue the legacy. And, I as long as we can stay afloat in this economy and remain profitable, we will continue to be family owned and run.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the things that and I think it shows up a lot, especially in, I think probably on any generational transition, but commonly from first to second. The first generation, they're the starters, right? They were the spark that set something in motion. So inherently, they tend to be risk takers. You know, they tend to put it on the line, as your dad did, saying, "All right, the business, the house, if it all goes up, it all goes up, but we're putting it all on the line, right?" The second generation, like you and I, often tend to be more risk mitigators.
Yeah, you said that right.
And I think it shows up even more so for some of the more informed third gens who often are categorized as the generation that messes everything up. But those that are in the know on that say, "Well, not on my watch." So they double down on risk mitigation. So do you see that in yourself, Alexandra? Not to say that you're risk averse, but that you carefully calculate risks that the business will take under your watch.
Absolutely. I am definitely a risk mitigator. I'm a good editor, so to speak, and I've always been good at stepping back from something and deciding what maybe needs to change to improve its strength or efficiency or whatever have you. I'm kind of a discerner, if you will. And so what my main goal is right now, especially and since I came in, is to establish and strengthen our processes and so that we're less vulnerable and much more stable for whoever's next in my lifetime, but also for whoever's next. I am also a very methodical and logical thinker. So, whereas mom is less that, she is certainly more of the risk taker versus me. So I'm known to definitely consider things much more heavily and with all different kinds of things pulled into the thought process than the first gen might have been. But that's also because I've heard the stories, I've seen some of the results from jumping headfirst into risk. And I have been a sponge and I've learned from all that, not in a fearful way, but in a thoughtful way.
So as you look at the business today, you step back and take a look. In addition to, it sounds like you've done a lot of work around establishing process and procedure, but what other areas of the business feel like distinctly you or yours, or you kind of say, I kind of owned that piece of it, whatever that or that initiative or that direction.
Yeah.
What feels kind of ownable to you under your watch right now?
Right now, I'd say it's sales and marketing. The biggest thing that I've done recently in the last couple of years is a big rebranding. You can kind of see some of our packaging here and our logo up here. We recently did a whole facelift. So I changed up our logo. I changed up the whole look and feel of our brand. New packaging, new look, all of that. And so mom was a little bit, being the risk taker she was a little bit nervous for me to take this risk because it was a big one, probably the biggest risk I've taken. But in the end, it ended up being the perfect way to reintroduce our brand. It's much more in line with the current pate eating demographic. It speaks to the cleanness and natural properties of our brand, no preservatives or artificial ingredients. So we made a nice clean package and it pops off the shelf in our category. So I think I'm most excited about that because it was a risk and it totally paid off. The feedback we get is just so great and everybody is just so excited about it. And you can see it in the cheese case from a mile away. It's exciting. That feels like I finally have my real stamp on things.
Nice. And I guess based on the feedback, mom's probably okay with it now.
Yes. She was nervous at the 11th hour. She's like, I don't know. I really have to say this. I don't think you should change the logo. And I was like, thank you very much for your feedback. And then I called the marketing person. I was like, change the logo. We're doing it. But once she came to the first trade show that I brought her to with the new packaging, she looked at me and she said, I get it now. I get it. She said, this was totally the right move. And you did a great job. And so for me, my mentor, my teacher, telling me I did a great job, I was like, yay. And then the industry thought it was a great job too. So that was extra with cherry on top.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I think it leads nicely into the next question I had for you, because sometimes, the next generation has to challenge assumptions or ways of doing that have been in place sometimes for years. So, in addition to changing up the facing of the brand and the packaging, what might be another area that you intentionally challenged or changed? The old thinking, well, we've always done it this way. Well, maybe that's not the best way anymore. So is there another area in the business where you've stepped in and said, I think we need to make a change here?
Truthfully, the first big change I made, which was a big change for our office, was I got rid of the fax machine. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. But all kidding aside, that's obviously a small change, but it did change a lot with our communication and made our communication a lot better. But aside from the rebranding and the sales strategy, it's just really well, having employees that you've had for a long time, they're very used to the way things have always been, and very used to the processes that have always been a certain way, and sometimes a little bit reluctant to change. So that puts a lot of homework on my plate to figure out how are we going to get through that challenge of change. I have really changed the way that those longtime employees think. I've really spent a lot of time coaching them and working with them and really letting them help guide me with the changes that we need to make. And so that's everything from processes, production processes that could be food safety, employee safety. I've put a lot of new structure in place to make sure we have a safe work environment and to make sure we're following and staying compliant with all the USDA and FDA regs that we have to follow. So I'd say probably the biggest change that I've made, aside from the rebranding, is really putting more structure in and ways for us to continue to be compliant and just be more on top of things in a more organized way.
Nice. So, regarding the rebranding and that effort, when you think about customers, and in this case, I'm not sure if it would be the end consumer or the retailer or distributor, but maybe speaking in the context of the end customer, what do you think they connect with emotionally when they encounter the Alexian brand in the marketplace?
I think, especially with the new packaging, we're able to communicate much more naturally and through vision and feel than we've ever been able to before. Somebody looks at the package and they can understand right off the bat without somebody saying to them that this is a clean brand, it has real ingredients in it. Just the look and feel of the whole thing is just, you feel good buying it because when you're looking at the ingredients label, and I hear this time and time again from the end consumer, that they're like, you don't have any nonsense in your package. It's honestly everything on the ingredients label is something that I have in my fridge or my pantry. And so I think that that's the biggest draw, that we have a fully all natural pate line. Not all pate in the US here or internationally can say that. But that's how we've always done it. So we didn't want to make a change to that. We did that before it was trendy. So, and we believe in making real food. And, I think that in this day and age, people really they want transparency. They want to know what's in their products. They want to know what they're eating is real and not full of garbage and chemicals and all kinds of stuff. I mean, believe me, I eat all kinds of things. I don't just stick with all natural food, but when I'm in the grocery store and I want to make a choice, I feel much better about a product when it has real ingredients in it. So I think that's really what intrigues people about our brand.
Excellent. So, the subject of AI has been dominating virtually every conversation, so many conversations. How or to what extent is AI showing up in your environment or in Grozinger Provisions as a resource or as a something that might even be more integrated?
AI is so interesting. What I'm excited about with AI is that as we move into new software, and things to get more with the times and better our efficiencies and things, I know that AI is becoming a big part of some of that software. So I'm already seeing it, but I'm excited to see how far it goes and how much better it'll get as we move into different software and different capabilities. But right now, the way it's really tying in is we're almost using it as an extra employee or as a consultant in a way. Things that maybe you used to have interns for, ChatGPT can do it. If I need to write a letter to an employee, I might put into chat, hey, write me a letter on this new health benefits change we're doing. Here are the bullet points. And then it'll just poof, write out a letter, and then all I have to do is look at it, edit it how I want, discerning, that's my thing. I can go in and edit it and change it however I want, but at least it's created a foundation and it takes the invention part of the process out of tasks like that. And then sometimes if we have some kind of a mystery or we're trying to figure out how to deal with something, sometimes we'll throw it into chat. When I say we, several employees do this. We'll put it into chat and it has a whole bunch of answers for us. Maybe they're not the right ones, but it gets us thinking. So that's really how we're using it. Not in a big official way, but it's certainly made some changes and it's another sounding board, if you will, to help us figure out how to move forward with certain things.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, I want to ask this question, and I often do ask it of other women executives who are on this show. As a woman owned business leader. Now, in your particular case, you had some strong mentorship and another strong woman leader being your mother. But in some industries, a woman at the helm is common, and some it's uncommon. So it means different things in different circles, I think, in terms of what's typical. To what extent has that shaped your journey, Alexandra? Or maybe how you show up in the marketplace.
We come from a meat background, and so the meat industry has historically been very male dominated. Even our little niche area of specialty food was historically very male dominated. So my mom spent a lot of her career kind of trying to run with the men, so to speak, wearing suits to things and just trying to fit in with all the men, because that's what women had to do a lot of the time. I'm fortunate enough where the industry has changed and there's a lot more females in leadership that I have the pleasure of working with. And so just listening to my mom's stories and even some of my stories with, any bias for being a female or in my case, my bias, there's bias with the way that I look because I have blonde hair and blue eyes and I'm short and I look like a child. And, so we face all these different things. But I think the one thing that I always remember is that I don't have to be anybody else but myself, whether that's, a man, woman, whatever your race, religion, whatever it is. I just have learned to be comfortable in my own skin and to always remember that and stay true to that. It's just there's going to be people out there that make a judgment on you and let them make it. Go ahead and do that. I'm strong and I'm running this ship and and I'm proud of what we do and I'm proud of, where I've come from and where I've gotten to. So I just as a woman-owned leader, I'm excited also to support other women out there and love to participate in, women business panels and, talk to girls in high school and college who are trying to figure out their careers. And I just love that. I love when girls and just people in general are wondering what to do and how to do it. And, I love to share my experience and try to inspire some people.
We're definitely doing that today, so we appreciate
Thank you.
what you're sharing right now. Now, is there could there be a third generation in the wings?
That's a question mark.
Okay.
I do not have children, so it won't be a third generation from me per se. We do have some younger ones in the family, but I think I'm trying to still come to terms with being the second generation that starting to
Okay.
think about the third generation is wild, but time will tell. We will see.
Okay. So if we did fast forward, say 5 years, maybe 10, what would make you feel that you've truly elevated Grossinger Provisions and the Alexian brand for, if not the next generation of Grossinger, the next generation of customers?
Truthfully, it's going to come from an operations perspective, and it's kind of a boring answer, but I'm excited about it. I can't wait to replace some of the legacy software systems and processes that we have in place. We've talked a lot about, what historically the company has done, and, in family business, you run into, well, this is always the way we've done it. And maybe that worked for a long time, but as the industry changes and as our business changes and as people change, we have to change with it and be mindful of that. And the biggest change that I see coming is getting rid of those legacy systems and getting into something that is much more with it. It probably has all kinds of AI capabilities in it, and I think it's going to change the way that we do business now in a really good way. That's going to set this brand, these brands, plural, up for the future. And whatever happens next, whether it's a third gen or someone else, hopefully, we will have set this up so maybe they don't have to put out as many fires as I did when I came on.
Cool. So if you're, imagine if your dad walked in today, aside from maybe grumbling a little bit about some of the compliance requirements that you have to undergo to operate, what do you think might surprise him most about what he would see today?
I think he would be surprised about how much product we put out. We have a small plant, same plant that he started in. But we have a really big reach and, we're selling products across the whole US, and also a little bit in Central and South America. And so when you're, when I'm traveling, like I was in Hawaii a couple years ago, that's so far away. It's part of the US, but it's a far trip from New Jersey.
Sure.
And so I'm over there, and I, of course, am doing store visits because that's what I love to do. I can't stay out of the grocery store even when on vacation. I found our products on the shelf, and it never gets old. And I think that's what my dad would be most excited about and probably surprised about because I think he really loved what he did and he came to America to share all that, but to see how much it's been built up and what his wife did and now what his daughter is doing, I think he'd be really proud and I think he'd be really surprised that you can find Alexian pate in Central and South America and, all across the country. I don't think he believed that it would have gotten to where it is. And most importantly, it has our names all over the package, and I think that's awesome.
So in many ways, his hope and vision at the
Yep.
start has come
Yep.
full circle and truly been fulfilled. So that's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So last question, if any of our listeners wanted to connect with you personally, Alexandra, or learn more about the Alexian brand or Grossinger Provisions, what's the best way for them to connect?
The best way to connect with me is to find me on LinkedIn, follow me, or send me a private message. And then, as far as our brand, visit alexianpate.com. You can find our links to our social media, so follow us there too. But you can send us an email through the website also, or to me via LinkedIn. We'd be happy to hear from you.
Great, great. Well, to wrap it up, legacy brands certainly don't survive by accident. They survive because each generation finds a way to preserve what matters most while moving the business forward. Alexandra, thank you so much for sharing your story and your own journey as the next generation leader of Grossinger Provisions. Again, we've been speaking with Alexandra Grossinger, president of Grossinger Provisions and steward of the Alexian brand. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Alexandra, thanks so much for being on today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.dalianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at dalianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.